Okay, we have been talking about something that you usually don't think about, and that is about idols. Idols are things that get our attention, that we don't usually think about it in this way, but ultimately they're what we look to kind of feel good about ourselves. They're things that we do or enjoy that make us very important or give us value. I was an athlete in high school, so I took great pride in that. Also, you know, academics are big here, so a lot of us put a lot of focus there, and that's a good thing to do. We talked about that a little bit before when I spoke before. The trouble is if they become all my world, if they become who I am, then that means they have become an idol. There's something that defines me, and I worship with my time, basically, and that's when it becomes dangerous. And because we live in a place that is very high success, performance-oriented, then that means we've got to especially look out for that, because it means that we're more prone to that. Okay? Today I'm going to talk about the illusion of control, or the idol of control. And by control, I mean when we feel like we need to control people or circumstances to get the desired effect. Okay? I forgot to bring it, but there's two instruments of control. Okay? One is, for a guy especially, it's this little box that has buttons on them, and you fight over who gets it, but usually the oldest guy in the room gets it, and it controls the TV, right, TV remote. There's power in that. There's control issues in that. I want to watch this. No, you're not. Okay, I'll look. I'm off. See, now Peter and I, we have this little thing going. He lives for ESPN. He is a man that knows most things about sports, okay? I personally get tired of these ESPN, you know, especially when your team's losing and things, but I like to know what's going on in the news. And for Pete, that's like gag me boring. You know, it's like, why would I want to watch O'Reilly? Anyway, you know, that's too late for him anyway. But all to say is, sometimes Pete and I will have this, you know, when I do this, and he's like, what? I'm like, you know what? And he finally turns over the remote. So, control issues, okay? Can I borrow this just for one sec? This is another symbol of control, okay? Because through this, and is a way that we can communicate and keep in touch, you know, and even kind of organize, right? What are you guys laughing about? You're just jealous you don't have one. She's taking notes on what I'm talking about. Don't give her a hard time. It's got control right on the top there. Thank you very much. But you know what? This can be, you know, a tool for control, how you can stay in control, okay? Thanks for letting me borrow that real quick. All right. Okay. We all have control issues, okay, at some level. We all, just human nature, we have control issues. So here's what I want you to do at your table, okay? You've got like 2 minutes. I want you to discuss, what are things that you, as a teenager, feel like you most want to control in your life, okay? What do you want to control in your life? Go. Ten seconds. Thank you. All right. All right, table leaders. I want to hear some of the answers that you got. So, Claire, what did your table come up with? Give me one. Your table. What did they say? Okay, your little brother and sleep. All right, that's a big one. Yes. Time. Okay, yeah, if we could only control time, we'd all be in on that for sure. Yeah. Control your sister. Good luck with that. Yes. Control your life. That's a big picture thing, but you're absolutely right. That's something we all do, is we want to control where our life goes, what happens in our life. Yes.
Football.
How do you want to control football?
I don't know. I just want to.
When I was a kid, and Redskins still stunk back then, it was the first, I wasn't even a Christian, but I prayed because I wanted to control. I wanted to see them win. So didn't work very well. Yes. Ooh. Yeah. If you could only control that.
People.
Control people. That's right. Matter of fact, you guys are actually beginning to develop really good habits to a very bad thing called manipulation. Okay? And if your parents say they want you to do something you don't want to do, you know, there's a lot of immediate things, the face, you know, the hurt, the anger, you know, the pout, the run, whatever. Yes. You already gave me yours?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, what time do you wake up in the morning?
Yes, if you can only keep hitting that thing and keep it going on. All right. Yes. You want to control school. That's a big desire there. Okay, let me pull this together for you. There's two major points I want you to understand about the idol of control. Okay, listen to me. The first one is this. Okay? The issue of control is an illusion. Okay? The issue of control is an illusion. I would state that you do not have control. And when we think we do, it's merely an illusion that we have for a time. And we're the ones that are deceived, thinking, I've got it all in control. I've got things going well. How many of you like the movie Despicable Me? Okay, I love that movie. Now, I was going to show you a clip from it, but I was techno-bummed because it didn't work out. But I will describe for you, because I know you're going to follow me. At the beginning of the movie, they show this little kid, and he runs out, and he falls on the pyramid, and you think he's going to die. But he bounces off because somebody stole the pyramid. Right. So then they come back and they introduce you to, what is the name of the despicable dude anyway?
Gru.
Exactly. So we meet Gru and he's driving along the road. Or actually, yeah, he's. I think it starts with him driving. He's talking. Right. Well, there are a couple things on this intro thing I wanted to show you. First is he goes in for coffee and he has major control issues. He's got a line. Now, who wants to wait in line? No one. So he pulls out this little, you know, gun thing, and he freezes them all. He walks to the front of the line, and the lady's just about to hand the coffee, and he goes, "Thank you very much." Puts change in the, you know, in the thing, and walks out. And she's like, "What happened? What happened?" Well, you know, if we only had that power, you know, to be able to go, done. Actually, I thought if I could take my TV remote and put it in my car, and when you came up to a light, if you could go, "Screen now," wouldn't that be a cool thing? That would be so cool. Of course, somebody would hit you because they didn't see it turn immediately red next to you, no yellow, okay? So Gru does that, and then he goes along, and you see this little person drive along, and they're really slow. And then there's this big car next to it, you know, kind of gets next to it and kind of pushes it out of the way. And then Gru comes by in this ginormous thing, you know, and just dwarfs both of those and pulls right on in. And then he sees his neighbor, and his neighbor, you know, says, "Hi," you know, and he says, "Your dog, you know, your dog's bothering me," you know, and he goes, "Oh, I'm really sorry, sorry." And he's leaving little piles of whatever he called it. And he goes, you know, dead dogs don't leave those things no more. And he goes, just kidding. But it is true. So, you know, there's a control thing going on there. So he goes inside. And then the infamous thing was he's sitting down, relaxing with the dog biting his arm and stuff like that. But he's sitting down and he hears a knock at the door. So he goes up to the door and, you know, he hears these voices and he goes, "Nobody's home." You know, I'm like, they're out there going, "This is a recording," you know. And then she kicks the door, you know, or whatever. But he doesn't like people bothering him, right? So he tries to deal with the door his own way, all right? He doesn't like having to wait, and he doesn't like getting behind slow people. So if we had a life like Gru, we could just clear everything out of the way and do our own thing. But life doesn't work like that, even though it's funny in the movie. But that's the way most of us think we can do it. The truth is, we all live with the illusion of control. We talk as though we're in control of all the factors in our life, or at least we're trying to get to that point. We think life will be good when I get control. Life will be great when my parents stop and you fill in the blank. Life will be finally okay and I'll have it control when, like, my younger sister, you know, is sent away to live with someone else or something like that. Let me give you a couple examples in my life, okay? Or just in general. If you stop and think about it, can you control your breathing? You can control it slow or fast, but have you ever thought if during the night it just stopped and you weren't aware? That'd be a bummer. Do you know what the deal is? It's an automatic reflex. Your body continues to breathe without you thinking about it. And it's a good thing, because some guys in junior high would stop thinking about it because they'd be, you know, ADD, and they'd just stop. They'd die because they forgot to breathe. So God gave us the auto switch, and it just keeps going for us. But we take that for granted, okay? As simple as that. We can't control the events around us. We can't foresee the future. There are so many people trying to guess what's going to happen in another week after the election. Who will be president? And everybody's trying to figure this out. And life will be so different if one wins over the other one winning. Okay? But they can't predict the future. All right? We can't change other people, even though we all agree that's something we'd love to do. There's things we can do, but we can't determine the outcome. Some things in my life. When I was at William & Mary in college, I'd got to put a burden on my life to be a youth pastor. And my dad had told me, who was not a believer at that time, he said, you know, go to a real school first, which was an insult, but I'll let that one go by. And so I went to William & Mary, and 2 years into it, my dad said, if you want to go to Bible college now, you can. So I was like, cool. I didn't bug him. I didn't try to, make a change happen. God did that for me. So when he said I could go to Bible college, I applied to two places. One is I applied to Moody Bible Institute, which is in Chicago. It's a great school. And I applied to Washington Bible College, which is also a good school. It's downtown, or actually it's in Atlanta, Maryland, but it's really small. And so the little bit of wisdom I had is, you know what, I'll go to Washington Bible and I'll drive home on weekends and work with the guy who was the youth pastor at Reston Bible here at that time, because he's the guy that led me to Christ. And what a great opportunity to learn how to do youth ministry. Well, that worked until I got home, got all squared away, and he informed me he was moving to New Hampshire. Bummer. I was still going to Washington Bible College. And it's a good thing, because if I hadn't gone there, Pete wouldn't be in the room today. I'd probably be somewhere else in the world, because I would have gone to Chicago. I wouldn't have done that. So it's crazy how that works. Secondly, when my wife and I are blessed to have a number of children, and I'll never forget, our second child is our son David. And I remember, the day he was to be delivered, and as typical, my wife has very long delivery. So when it finally got to the time and the place where he was to be delivered, David came out, and he didn't breathe. And he didn't breathe. And he didn't breathe. And you're waiting for that. When they smack the butt, and it's like, oh, he's alive, he's breathing, that's really good, he's alive. Good. Well, that didn't come, and that didn't come, and that didn't come. And Lisa and I just looked at each other, and they ripped David out of the room and took him off. And we're just sitting there going, God, did you have us have this child for only this moment? We didn't know. Did we have control? Not a bit. But we knew the one who had control, so we prayed. And we said, God, thank you for our son David, if that's our only time to meet him. But we pray that you will work. And he did. He turned blue in our presence. They ripped him out, got him to ICU, got him breathing. And he's alive and well today in New Jersey. So, when we went to England on a mission trip, I arrived with about 20 people. It was late at night at Heathrow. We'd done all the preparations we needed to. We got over to the area where we were supposed to pick up our vans. Because of our size, you couldn't buy little cars, you needed vans. We had to travel an hour and a half south to go to the church that we were working at. Got there, and the guy informed me not only did he not have anything with our name on it, they did not have vans at that site. They don't do vans at that site. And so here I was, I'm like, all right, God, I have absolutely no clue how in the world this is going to work out, but it's late at night, I've got to go an hour and a half, and I'm not really thinking you want us to sleep in this place tonight. So the cool thing was, instead of freaking out, I just said, this is really cool, because I had no control over this. I did everything I could, but in an hour, just the way, and I won't give you all the details, but in an hour, I got a call from the president of the company in Washington State, back in the United States. And God had moved in a crazy way, and he called to tell me, I will get you vehicles in the next half hour. I apologize for all you've gone through. That's crazy. Who does that? Well, God does that. But I had no control. The best one, I guess, in terms of the reality check of control is, when Lisa and I were married and we had our first child, Christy, it was great. One child, we never knew like how crazy cool that was, just to have one child to focus on. Well, we took, I'll never forget, we went to the mall, you know, and she was a toddler, and so, you know, you're playing that thing where there's clothes in a circle, you know, and so she'd get in the middle there, and I'd go, you know, and whatnot, and we'd, you know, do a couple things, and we'd look in again. Well, one time I looked in there, and she wasn't there, and I looked around the corner, she wasn't there, I looked around the corner, she wasn't there, and I looked at Lisa, you know, that look, where is she? We called her name, didn't hear her. And that was during a time, your parents could probably tell you, when kids were being snatched. And it's like the worst nightmare just hit us. Like, oh my gosh. So we both start looking and wanting. And so parents, here's the deal. I think we were like in Macy's. I went down this one path, you know, one aisle. Went down another aisle. And then there was this long one. And I saw her way in the distance. And so I ran after that little girl, snatched her up, kissed her, and told her, don't you ever do that again. But you know what? In that split second, you realize, you know what? We live with the illusion of control. I know one of my, Lisa and I's greatest fears is having our kids play in our front yards because people, you know, were having their kids snatched from their yards. But it came to the point where we were like, God, we can't live paranoid. Either you are God, and we're going to do our best to watch out for them, but I can't lock them in the house and just say, I'm so afraid that, you know, I just can't even let you be outside. At some point, we do our diligence. But that's where I want you to realize, first foremost, that control is an illusion. And the more you try to enforce it or to make it happen, you're going to have to realize that there's a problem with that. Okay, I want you to show you one other thing. Psalm 73. I'll just mention it to you. It's the Psalm of David. And what David does is he pours out his heart because he says, you know what? I've lived the right way. I've done everything right, and as I look around, all the wicked people are doing better than I am. And he said, I guess I've done it foolishly. I guess it's not even worth it to follow you, God. He says, they look so proud. They look so in control. They'll tell me whatever, you know, they will put us down. They mock us. They say, God is not in charge of anything. And he said, I continued that way until the Lord got my attention, and he showed me their end. And this is where God is calling you in the issue of control to trust him by faith. That God's saying, I have you in my hand, and I have the situation under control. And for a short time, it will look as though all those who do not love God or follow God are just doing great, having a great time. Even at your age, you have friends that you know right now are doing things that are pretty bad. And part of you is like, oh, I'm missing out. I don't see them struggling. I don't see them getting in trouble. They're getting away with it. They're cheating on their tests and doing better than I am because I'm working hard. You know, they're doing stuff in guy-girl relationships that I know getting away with it. Others are experimenting with other things. This is what God told David. He said, when you understand their end, you will realize that I have given them time and space to repent. But they're on a slippery path. And an instant, in a second, without them being warned, they will realize I was not in control. My life crashes down and I need God. And he said, be prepared because I want you not to be misled and I want you to be prepared to be there for them. So what does the Bible have to say in terms of control? Here's some things I want you to remember as well. In James 4, it says, instead of the attitude of, I've got it all in control and I can do whatever I want, it says, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. In other words, God's saying, instead of you saying, I've got it all in control, you'll hear, how many of you heard people say, Lord willing? You've never heard that. That's where it comes from. Like if you say, hey, I'm hoping to come see you, Lord willing. And I recognize that God is in control of what's going on around. Proverbs 6:10 says, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. That was exactly what happened in England. I planned my way. I talked to the people who were going to have the cars there, and I got it all set up. And when I got there, God knew. He wasn't surprised. And it made me depend on him. God had a way, but I had to follow him in that. Luke 12 says, and he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Okay, what's happening to this farmer? Anybody tell me? In those two short verses, what is happening to this farmer? The land of the rich man was very productive. If your land's productive, you have a lot of crops. Corn, wheat, whatever. So he had a lot coming in. This year in the United States, our farmers had a really hard time. It was such a bad drought. It's not true for this guy. He had a ton that was coming in. Then his response to that was, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger barns. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, now who does this? Soul? Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, chill out, eat, drink, and be merry. What is he doing here? Okay, he's basically saying, I believe what's happening now will continue. I've created this great farm. This farm is making me rich. This rich stuff will keep going. I'll build bigger barns to where I don't even have to work anymore and I can chill out. Look what Jesus said to him, and this is on the subject that we're talking about. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and who will own what you've prepared? What did he not have control over? And what does that mean? What happened to him in this, when it says, this night your soul is required of you, it's kind of a fancy way for something. What happened to him that night? He died. He died. And see, and that's the thing where, you know, we can act arrogant and in charge of our life up until the moment that you die. And you realize, I didn't choose the day I died. God does that. And that's a little bit of a picture to say, you know what, that's actually what's happening your entire life. Yeah, the reality check was in his pride and arrogance. He assumed that he could do all things. He was lacking a fear of God, and he was lacking the common sense to know what to do with it. Conclusion is that control is an illusion, so why should we fight so hard to get it? But with that, I have a question for you. Is there a way, is what I'm saying then, if control is an illusion, does it mean that we're going to live our lives out of control? Or is there a way to find control in a crazy life? There is. But you've got to be able to see what you're doing and then choose to do something different. Okay? The second thing I want to talk about is the battle over my will, battle with my will over control. Okay? There's a battle. Each of us has a will. How many of you are strong-willed? You should know. Raise your hand. Come on, put it up there. All right. Peter, get your hand up there. All right. Okay, strong will, which means your will isn't easily moved. Your will goes, going that way, and your parents are going, no, we need to go that way. And they're like, no, 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 okay. You know, I mean, there's a lot of pressure that has to motivate your will because you're like, I've chosen this. I've chosen this. I'm not doing anything else different. Okay? There's a book called by James Dobson, The Strong-Willed Child. I forget the far part, like dealing with a strong-willed child. Or good luck with a strong-willed child. But you know what? We all have a will. Some are stronger than others. But you know who I think was strong-willed in the Bible? I think the Apostle Paul was strong-willed. Why do I know that? Because he had the strength of will to go through, if you've read his account of his life, how many times did he get shipwrecked? I think it says 3 times. It would take me 1 time to go, I don't think I need this ship thing anymore. And man, he was out at sea, the ship broke apart, he was floating, hours, days, finally made it to land, okay? Take me 1 time to go, I don't think I'm doing the ship thing anymore, sorry. Let's have to get off the island to get back to real land, okay? A strong will can be a very good thing or it can be the thing that will ruin your life. Someone who has a weak will, you're not necessarily that much better. Because if you have a weak will, that means other people can direct your will. And sometimes you're the people that you'll have friends and they'll go, let's do this. And because your will's not strong enough, you go, okay, all right, I'll try that. I'll do that. I'll wear that. I'll act like that. And that's really bad. You need a stronger will. You need a will that says what's right and says, I'm going to live for that. And if you don't want to do that, that's okay. But I am not going to follow you. You guys, for some of you, have, you know, this year, and then you're going to be in high school. If you don't figure this one out, it could really be bad. You need to have strength of will. But what do you do with it? A couple things I want to talk to you about here. It is the power for good and evil. When I submit my will to God's will or to a good purpose, okay, it's an awesome thing. Today, in Washington, D.C., they're doing a thing called the Marine Corps Marathon. 2 of my kids were crazy enough to have run that thing and finished. It's crazy. You know, 26.2 miles. I could do the 0.2 miles. The 26 is what I struggle with. But you know what? Anybody who runs a marathon has conditioned their will to say, I will not give up. I will not give up. I will not give up. And you know what? I think any of you could probably do the marathon because I was there twice. And the crazy thing is all the way along the race, the entire race, there are hordes of people all around you. And you know what they're doing? They're not booing. They're not like, come on, pick it up. Crazy outfit. You got to give up. No, they're saying, you go, man. You're doing it. You're doing well, you know, and they're just cheering you. And I thought, you know what? I think if somebody cheered me the entire way, I could probably do it. Because my mind would just go, yeah, I'm all that. But you know what? You still have to have a will that locks on and says, I will not let pain. I will not let, you know, a lot of pain in different parts of my body be the thing that motivates me. I will stick on to that. Same thing with following Christ. If you said, I will live a pure life, and at the daily challenge, I will live a pure life. I will not watch that. I will not look there. I will not think on those things. I will not listen to that joke. I will not wear those clothes. I will live a holy and righteous life by God's grace and God's help. It starts in you. It's got to go there. But this is what I want you to realize. If I allow my will to be directed by my flesh and my intellect, I can lock into a spiral that means I go down and down and down. That's what's happening to some of your friends right now. They've locked their will onto, I will do this. Some of your friends, how many of you have had friends that say, I can't wait to get out of my house. I hate my parents. I can't wait to get out from under their rules. Raise your hands. Come on, put them up. Right. It's very honest. It's our heart. But that shows you, if you let that thought, if they let that thought continue, they're going to crash and burn. Okay? Two verses on this. Okay? Isaiah 53, this is true of all of us. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each one of us has turned to his own way, but the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. Romans 8, what then? Are we better than they, talking about Jews versus Gentiles? Not at all, for we've already charged that both Jew and Gentile and Greeks are all under sin. As it is written, there are none righteous, not even one. There's no one who understands. There's none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. We've gone our own way. The definition of sin is going our own way instead of the way that God has for us to go. Jesus shared the way out. Okay? Matthew 16. He's talking about how do you get control in your life. And Jesus says to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, if mean follow me, be a part of what I'm doing, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For anyone who wishes to save his life, hang on to his life, look what I'm saying to you. If you're going to try to get control and you're going to hang on to this life, exactly what you want, he said you'll lose it. You're not going to get it. You're going to lose it. But whoever loses his life, and that's where I want you to this picture of, I release my life to God. It's the picture of an open hand that says, God, you can put stuff here and you can take it away. But most of us are like, no, I'm hanging on to what I got, God. Don't take it away. Don't take this girl from my life. Don't take this opportunity from my life. Don't take this ability from my life. Some of you are great in sports, and the thought that God would let your ACL be ripped apart would be pretty hard. But God says, I want you to do this. Let me give and let me take away. We sing that song. But he says, I want you to let me have control. If you do that for my sake, you'll find it, what you're really looking for. For what? And he throws this question out. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? What if you were to do this and you were to get it all, but to lose your own soul, die and never know Christ? That's what happens to a lot of people. They're doing this to God and they never come to know him. In eternity, it's like, what? Who cares if you're a billion gazillionaire in eternity? It doesn't matter. Or what will a man give in exchange for a soul? Two things I want you to realize. Number one, you need to release your life to find it. Most of us live with iron fists holding on to it. In our pride, we think no one can do this better. No one can make decisions about my life better, even God. And sometimes we think, if I let God make decisions, he will do things that I don't want to do or don't like, and they'll be bad. And that's where this thing of release becomes denying myself. I need to remove the authority from myself and give God the final authority. And this needs to be an ongoing, present decision. Okay, when he talks about, if anyone wants to come after me, I tell myself no in an ongoing way. I want to give you a picture right now. It's not a great one. Sorry, it isn't more HD, high Q. But this one I did get video on. This is an ancient proverb of how do you catch a monkey. And I'll show you how to do that. I know you guys are all wanting a monkey, so this is how you're going to get it. It's in French. Sorry about that. He said Bushman. There's the monkey. In case you can't tell. He's putting food inside there. Notice the illustration there. Puts food down in there. What will happen? Oh, listen to the girls in here. They're all sad for the monkey. All right. We can kill it there. Let's go. All right. Okay, so. So that's how you catch a monkey. What was the problem there? What happened? I'm sorry. Right, so he could have easily gotten out, right? What was he unwilling to do? Let go of it. He's like, I've got some awesome food. He didn't even know what it was. But you know what? You and I are exactly like that. Stop for a second and think about this. You and I are exactly like that. You have got a hold of things in your life right now that God is saying, I want you to let it go. It could be an attitude. It could be friends. It could be sin. And God's saying, let it go. And you're like, I'm not letting it go. And just as foolish as it was for that monkey who had freedom anytime he wanted it, God says to you, you have freedom anytime you want it, but you've got to release your hand to me and let me fill it. Okay, so real quickly, the second thing, you release what you think you need for life when God says it's not that. And then secondly, it says if anyone comes after you, must deny himself and then take up his cross. Your cross is the reality that God says something's got to die, and the thing that has to die is yourself. And so God's going to do things that are going to give you that opportunity. When your parents come down and harden you and your pride wants to come out, you have a great opportunity to kill pride by going, you know what? You're right. I'm not going to fight for this. When your friends tempt you by saying, hey, we're going to go out there, and your desire is, I want to go there, and you're like, I'm not going to go there. It kills that desire. One of our greatest fears when we think about releasing our life to God is what He'll ask us to do. He doesn't ask us to do things we don't like by preference. I do not believe God ever sends someone to some far-off place you never want to go. But what He does ask us to do that we all don't like is that is to let Him lead and let Him make the final decision. By taking up my cross, I'm dying to myself, which allows me to release my will. It will be tested by every choice that I have to make. When I say no to my will, a part of me dies. It's the only way that I can do this. The only way I can do this is if I trust the goodness of God, that what's beyond this test is life. And that's what God has said He will do. I want you to close your eyes just and bow your heads right now. What we've talked about today has a parallel, and that is when the children of Israel were slaves, God called them out of that. He did amazing things to do that. They got to see Him work in incredibly powerful ways. But then He brought them to the land that He wanted to give them, called the Promised Land. And in that land were all the good things of life that they didn't even need to create. But the one thing they had to do is trust God to walk into that land, that He would be with them, that He would fight for them. And they said no. And they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years and died. With your eyes closed right now, I want you to realize you have some decisions to make. Is God good? Is His way good? Will you trust Him to follow Him in that way? Will you trust Him enough to obey Him in those things? Heavenly Father, right now I ask that in these young hearts and minds that they'll remember the story of that monkey. Because God, we all try to hold on to things to our own hurt. I pray, Lord, today they would open their hand to You. Allow You to give and take away. God, when we do that, You say we have control. Lord, You are the one who holds all things together in this world. God, I pray You give us wisdom to believe that and to live that. And Lord, I pray right now for anyone in this room where something else is controlling them. God, I pray You give them the freedom they desire. I pray that they would trust You and obey You. Thank You, Lord, for this time. And we praise You in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, you guys, have a great week. Watch out for the storm.